Okay. Take your time. Whenever you're ready.
I'm ready, Your Honor. May it please the court. Plaintiff contends that the trial court erred in granting a summary judgment in the matter of Josette Repo versus the Recovery School District of Louisiana. There is one or more genuine issues of material fact as to whether the Recovery School District reasons given by the district were just pretextual. Plaintiff has produced strong evidence to show that the defendant's proffered reason were either false or unworthy of credence. Subject to questions and responses from this honorable panel, appellant Josette Repo will attempt to make the following points. But for her age, Josette Repo would not have been fired. Age was not a harmless error, as we've heard in prior arguments today. She was highly qualified, and out of 3 or 4 years, she had the second best test scores, and the third best test scores twice, and then the fourth best test scores. She had an excellent evaluation, her teachers performed well, and when former First Lady Laura Bush came to town, she gave her school, Repo School, a $75,000 grant. What else we would like this honorable panel to know is that 5 younger principals at lower performing schools were not terminated. Principals at lower performing schools were not terminated, and they were younger. In fact, there were 5 assistant principals brought in after my client was fired. They were younger. We would respectfully suggest that what has been presented in oral argument by the state, they were trying to clean up their action rather than base the argument on what the trial court found. The trial court found that there were 3 reasons given for age discrimination. We beg to differ with that. We're clear that age discrimination was mentioned by Ms. Repo to the EEOC. She was very clear in her statement. And I won't be reading much at all today, but I'll say this. Ms. Repo said, "I believe I've been discriminated against because of my age, 61 years, in violation of the Age Discrimination in Employment Act of 1967, as amended, in that many RSD central office staff members were and have been replaced with much younger staff members from other states." So in effect, she was giving a reason, but for her age discrimination. That was one reason given by the appellant. The second reason was given by her employers. Her employers gave many reasons, but the first reason they said was his test scores. This is what she was told by her supervisor. When she asked Human Resource Director Samantha Brown, "Samantha, what's the real reason why I'm fired?" The response was, and it's in the record, "Oh, it's about your age. You know, they don't think older people are flexible," in the record. So that was the second reason, but it wasn't my client's reason. She was merely repeating.
Okay, and that's what I wanted to ask you about.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. Yes.
What evidence do we have that Ms. Brown was a participant in the decision-making process? I know she's human resources lady, but the human resources lady, for example, in the United States government, doesn't have anything to do with who I hire as a law clerk, but she sits down with them and gets their W-4 and, you know, gets their benefits set up and does all of that. So she is the human resources lady, but she doesn't have any involvement in whether I hire or fire them and who I hire and fire and how I do it. So to me, the title human resources person doesn't answer the question of what involvement did she have in knowing the decision-making process to give that information. Is it just her opinion, or do we have evidence that she participated in some way to know that?
Yes, Your Honor, excellent question. It wasn't her opinion as just an ordinary employee. Samantha Brown was in charge of hiring and firing. Samantha Brown wasn't
the... Where is that in the record, that she actually is the one who made the decision to fire?
No, Samantha Brown is the one who sent her a letter, yes.
She sent the letter.
Okay, yes.
But I can ask my secretary to write a letter. What I'm saying is, how do we tie Ms. Brown to the decision? Other than just her title, which to me...
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. And here's how we tie Ms. Brown to the decision. Ms. Brown's second reason for the termination. Ms. Brown said, because your efforts were ineffective, which has nothing to do with tests. Ms. Brown also said, your overall performance evaluation did not meet district standards, which is contrary to the facts. Pardon me? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading from a June 11th letter that's in the record from Ms. Brown notifying my client. Three different reasons why she says she was fired.
Where in the record is that?
Your Honor, I don't have the number, but I will definitely provide it to the court. Yes. And then the fourth reason was she did not meet the school achievement performance test. And to all, Your Honors, the point I'm making is...
And counsel, I appreciate you've got a lot of passion for your case, and I appreciate that, but
yes.
I'm trying to get kind of to a bottom line. To me, the fact that a human resources person sends the letter doesn't make them part of the decision. I can tell someone else, I can tell my law clerk, please go tell Mr. X that my decision on this is something. And that law clerk can simply be a messenger, or I can say to the law clerk, you make the decision, obviously not about a case, but you make the decision on who we hire as an intern, say, and you go deal with it, and I have nothing to do with it.
Yes.
How do we know which one that is, this is?
Now, Your Honor, I don't know if this addresses specifically, but I'm going to take a shot at this.
Okay.
Superintendent Patrick Dobart, who's named in the case, in terms of giving a reason, he follows up with, school performance. And in particular, he says that you've been removed from the position of Schoenberg principal based on determination that you failed to competently and effectively manage the school. His words, this is the superintendent's final word. Our point, Your Honor, is that after my client was informed by her immediate supervisor, Monica Baudouin, that she would be released, she asked her to put it in writing. And that's in the record. We'll stipulate that. We'll show that to the court. And then Ms. Baudouin never put it in writing. A couple months later, after my client filed an EOC complaint, then these reasons come up, and it's about four or five of them. Our position is that these reasons are pretextual in that when you look at the records of the actual performance of my clients, the 92% success in terms of her...
I thought your client asked for a hearing after she was told she's going to be released. She asked for a hearing or a review of that, and it was, in fact, reviewed. And then that's when the superintendent or the second in charge said...
Here's what I know for a fact. I didn't represent her at the time. I know for a fact there was no lawyer there. I don't know.
Okay, but there was a process.
Yes.
Okay, so that's why there might be an evolution here in what was going on, because it starts with the supervisor saying, I'm going to release you, and then there's a process where that could be reviewed.
Your Honor,
Was there or was there not?
I agree that was... Part of the process, Your Honor, was that they were coming up with reasons to justify her termination because there were nine other schools with scores lower than my client's. Nine. Four of those principals were retained. Four were retained at Craig School, at Cohen School, at Reed School, and at another school across the river. Four of them were retained. My client, they were younger. Not only, once my client, no, and you understand, the only reason why I'm explaining this is that.
They were retained. How did they score when
How did they score? Very good question. I have the scores right here. Rolanda Green, okay. Walter L. Cohen, a 28. My client had a 70, and the last year was 72. Joseph Craig, a 48. 0.3, Sarah T. Reed, a 33.7, Maury Henderson, 57.1, and they were retained. Oh, and one last point, Yana. And the person who replaced my client, who's 33 years old, came from
Pennsylvania after having been suspended in both Pennsylvania and in Georgia. We believe, according to the facts, this is an issue that the trial court assumed that the Recovery School District had a legitimate reason, but the facts are contrary to that assumption. There was no legitimate reason until after they realized that my client had filed an EOC complaint. Then they started coming up with reasons, Judge Haynes.
It's clear, Counselor, that in April of 2012 was when she was first told, you know, you're
verbally going to be released. Yes.
And then she asks for a hearing or some kind of review, and that's when Brown sends a letter, says, we're going to get you a hearing. And then she did have a hearing, according to the record, on July 2nd, 2012.
Yeah, I know she asked for a hearing. I did not represent her.
I don't. Really, that's not the question. You ought to know what the record is. I mean, if I know this,
I know a hearing was scheduled. I know the lawyer. There was no lawyer. I know there was no lawyer. I know that. Now, what, did she go to a meeting? As I said, Your Honor, very good. There's nothing in the record that justify her termination based on that hearing. That issue was deferred to the state court. So there are two claims, to be clear. One was breach of contract and whether or not they went through the process that Judge Haynes is talking about. That's been referred to the state court. That hadn't been litigated. The only question before the trial court was whether or not, because of her age, she was discriminated against. So in terms of the due process, the hearing...
No, I'm not asking if she got due process. I'm asking as a factual matter, was there some event on July 2nd in which Ms. Ruppel and Cruz, Nash Cruz, the chief of staff, got together and had some discussion about the topic of whether she should be kept,
Your Honor,
gone?
Believe it or not, I'm glad you asked that. Cruz was not a supervisor. Ness Cruz was a consultant.
Yes or no? How about that? Yes or no? Did something happen on July 2nd, 2012, involving Cruz and Ruppel? Yes or no?
Not that I'm aware of, and not that the trial court used to say that the case should be dismissed, Your Honor. That's just my point. I don't doubt that there were some attempts made after the fact in terms of harmless error to clean up the error, but the trial court says that age was not the determinant factor. We says, at least that's in dispute, Your Honor. That's all I'm saying. At least it was in dispute, and that my client should have her a full day in court, and these issues would come out, Judge Haynes. All of that would come out had she been allowed to have a full day in court. That's what we suggest with all respect. I'd like to reserve any additional time I have for rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Kessler.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Kessler, here on behalf of the state defendants. This case is squarely controlled by the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in the Gross case, 557 U.S. 167, and yet Ms. Ruppel's counsel completely glosses over it. That was the basis for the district court's decision. It's still good law, and there's simply no reason not to affirm the district court's ruling, which was correct. That case held
the human relations director making a statement, at least that the evidence shows, that they're being discharged because of age. What do you do with that?
Well, first of all, it's not competent summary judgment evidence. It's merely Ms. Ruppel was referring to her statement in her own EEOC charge statement.
Why don't you assume, arguendo, we're going to consider it evidence, and then if you would mind answering the merits.
Okay. Assuming that it was competent summary judgment evidence.
Which you dispute,
yes,
I understand.
Certainly. That being said, there's still the person who made the decision, Monica Boudouin. You were getting into that with what is the HR director's role. Ms. Boudouin was the director of student achievement. That is a position that ties directly to the analysis of how the teachers are performing, how the students are performing, and how the administrators are performing. Nash Cruz, the chief of staff for the RSD, also is involved in this decision. There's simply no evidence to suggest that either of them held any sort of age-based animus.
Well, here's the question. What I'm trying to figure out is if Ms. Brown, she made that statement, as Judge Higginbotham noted, that's a problem for you. If we find it to be competent evidence, is there evidence in the record from which we can infer that Ms. Brown had knowledge of what the decision-maker's animus was? In other words, let's suppose that there had been a meeting with the supervisor, the chief of staff, the superintendent. They sat around saying, well, this lady's too old, she's getting old, we ought to fire her. And Ms. Brown is just sitting there. And later on, Ms. Brown tells Ms. Ruppel. You would admit that'd be some evidence.
If that there was
assuming it was all properly presented. Okay.
There is zero evidence to that effect.
That's what I'm trying to find out is, assuming Ms. Brown made this statement and it's properly before us, where did it come from? Was it her own opinion, or was it based upon some sort of meeting or involvement with the actual decision makers?
I'm glad
what does the evidence
that,
show?
Because there's simply no evidence in the record as to the genesis of that statement. They had ample opportunity to request the deposition of Ms. Brown. Discovery closed. They did not request her deposition, nor that of anyone else with the RSD. In fact, in the discovery responses that we had attached as an exhibit to the motion for summary judgment, interrogatory number 7 asked, what evidence are you relying upon to support the basis of age-based discrimination? There was no mention whatsoever of Ms. Brown's comment. There also was no mention whatsoever of Ms. Brown's alleged comment in the original petition. Now, supposedly that statement had already occurred based off of the timing of the EEOC charge, and yet, curiously, it was not even mentioned in the original petition, nor in the discovery responses.
Well, in the paragraph of her EEOC charge, she stated that I was told by Ms. Baldwin that I was being discharged because of my test scores. Then she says, also, I was told by Mrs. Brown that I was being discharged because of my age. So was that statement then in the actual charge, EEOC charge?
Yes, the statement is in the EEOC charge.
Okay.
Now, there's evidence that there's case law that we've cited that says an EEOC charge is not probative, not competent evidence. That's, I believe, the Frazier versus Indiana Department of Labor case that we'd cited, Johnson versus AutoZone.
She made that statement in the charge to the EEOC. And did you take her deposition?
No, we saw no tactical need to do so.
You didn't take her deposition. Did you engage any other discovery other than just a generalized interrogatory? Tell me all your evidence.
We also asked for written documents as well, and we received those very shortly before the summary judgment, the deadline for filing dispositive motions, at which point we were ready to go based off of the evidentiary record. In particular, getting back to what we were getting into on the Gross case, the EEOC charge statement on the face of it reflects multiple bases, where the statement from Ms. Baudouin saying it was because of low test scores. On the face of that, and with Gross in mind, that case held that
there's nothing. This record that statement comes out of nowhere. Well, it's not come out of nowhere. It's in the EEOC charge. Is what started all this. Now it's a very different question about competence in the record. My question was, put aside competence. Let's assume that that is evidence. What do you do with it, and what's the effect on your case?
What you do with it is you apply the teaching of the Gross case. Gross says that age has to be the but-for reason, i.e. there can be no other reasons. We went all the way through discovery. It's not a case where he simply, where Ms. Ripple said, I'm pleading.
How do you say that? How do you find that if you accept that statement on its face as I was being discharged because I was being discharged because of my age? And how do you say as a matter of that doesn't raise an issue of fact as to whether or not you meet the causation, the but-for standard.
That would basically allow virtually any plaintiff to simply avoid summary judgment by.
Well, any plaintiff can do that if they swear to the statement, and the statement itself is that, because it's just a credibility. The fact that she makes it doesn't mean that it's inadmissible.
But we do separately have to account for the multiple layers of.
You're giving me no answer except that it's not competent evidence. And I don't know if you're deliberately avoiding my question, but my question is, it's been asked to you repeatedly now, is a very straightforward one. If that statement is competent evidence, what is the impact upon your case? How can you sustain a summary judgment or grant in this case?
Summary judgment is warranted because of Gross, because they have identified multiple causes. But for causation means it's the only cause. That's the teaching of the Gross case. It's still good law. And meanwhile, Ms. Ripple has totally failed to try and distinguish the effects of the Gross case in her brief to this court or in the oral argument by her counsel. That case holds that if you're pleading multiple reasons for the decision, age necessarily is not the but for reason. Secondly, It's well established that this court can affirm the decision of the lower court as long as there's a basis in the record to do so. There is ample evidence in the record that we've provided legitimate, non-discriminatory reasons, and Ms. Reipel has not not satisfied her burden to show.
Your statement of law, any time a plaintiff pleads multiple reasons for being fired, the case can be dismissed because he's not pled but for causation. I suggest to you that but for causation, you misstate the but for cause. The question is, but for that, would she have been fired? And put with us the evidence of the performances of the people, the other schools who weren't fired. So that is competent summary judgment evidence. So coming back to my question, assuming the competence of that statement, what you're faced with is you have a direct statement by a person of authority. I don't know what her participation is. A great statement that this was what she was told was a reason for she was being fired. And you have the evidence that other people were not terminated who had poor performances than did she.
And I would like to get into that as well.
All right, well, fine, but that's the question, and I'm not fussing at you. I just need an answer. You give it to me, you don't. But
I've been trying to give it to you as best as I can, and the way the Supreme Court held in Gross, the district court correctly applied it. It's also true that
does it matter that Ms. Brown was or wasn't a decision maker in the process as to what the impact of her statement?
I think that
matters.
That's
why I'm asking about that.
Yes, if she was the sole decision maker and it was competent evidence, then yes, that would be an issue. Here, however, the issue is that...
Is she a decision maker at all? Or is she just the implementer of human resources decisions made by other people?
My understanding is she's more the implementer than the decider. The academic specialists are the director of student achievement and the chief of staff, who focus more directly on those types of decisions.
Okay, now what do you do about the similarly situated, better treated younger people?
Okay, first of all, there's a couple of mischaracterizations. For instance, the principal who was at Cone, which was the school that had the student performance score of 28, that individual was demoted. Now, there were some, what happened was he happened to have a very strong record in discipline, and they created a separate position that's an administrative position for him. It is not an in-school position,
position. They gave her an alternative. She could come back and teach in her, and where she was certain certificate, or she held it in an area where she held a certificate, she was retained if she chose to do so, didn't it?
Yes, they offered her.
So there's no difference there.
Right. Right. And also, if you look at the ages of the individuals who were discharged at the time, the hiring and retention decisions, four of the six who were discharged were over age 55, I believe. Or, I'm sorry, four of the six who were retained, four of the six principals of RSD schools who were retained were over age 55. Conversely, three of the six who were discharged.
What do you mean over 55? So they're 110?
It was just trying to get a meaningful comparison.
What is the difference between being 55 and 65? Not much.
Yes. She's 61.
She was 61, and most of the others were in their late 50s.
Her general, peer group, so to speak.
That's correct.
You were going to say three of six?
I believe it's three of six who were discharged were under age 55. Age was simply not a factor. Secondly, there's ample evidence that we've put in the record that has gone wholly unrefuted regarding the failure to meet her school's performance goals. For instance,
were there other principals whose schools also didn't meet performance scores, but whose principals were younger who were then retained in the same position?
I thought all these schools were underperforming. I thought generally, I don't know what this particular school district is, I'd be surprised if any of them didn't met those test scores.
Right. Well, part of the problem is that...
What is it? What are the facts?
I'm sorry.
Were the other schools performing or not?
Some were performing better than others. Some were improving their performance. Her school was stagnating, and that's why it got downgraded from a D grade based off of the school performance score to an F grade on her watch.
But they kept changing the metric. I mean, it went from being a C grade to an F grade, I think. The 70 or something like that. So if you're basically performing at an average level, and then they change what's average to be what used to be a B, Well, that becomes difficult, right? I mean, part of this is you've got different, you know, areas of the community that have challenges, and some students are, you know, in areas where the performances are not as good and so on. And so it isn't all the principal's doing. I mean, there's only so much you can do with the resources you have and the, you know, situation, and maybe sometimes there's absent parents and so on. So there's a lot that goes into whether a student performs well, only one aspect of which is the principal.
Right. But also you look at the pattern over time, and over 2 years, there was virtually no change in the school's SPS score. Her goal was to improve the SPS score by 10 points per year. And over time, that when you get into the sliding scale, the RSD was not content with mediocrity. They wanted to improve the standards and to force improvement.
So the other schools were meeting those goals.
But yeah, and it's not based off of a single up or down decision, a single snapshot in time. The 28.4 figure for the Cone school was just that particular year. There's no evidence in the record as to where how they were 2 years before. And that principal was demoted in any event.
We look at the record in this case, we're going to find that these other schools here, that those particular principal schools performed better than the plaintiff in this case and met their goals. And you already said some of them didn't meet their goals either, although I'm not real clear about that. You said, did she fail these state tests? How many of these other people passed the test that she allegedly failed?
Each school had their own sets of goals based off of where they were. There's no evidence in the record as to what goal in particular a particular school had, but there is obviously the evidence regarding the overall score, what the RSD expected over time. They expected progress and improvement. The fact that Schaumburg did not improve on Ms. Reipold's watch ultimately led them to fall below the D grade threshold, and because it was stagnating and the performance.
So the schools all had different requirements to be met. In other words, somebody assigned each school some kind of goal, and there were different goals. And so you kind of—I'm not sure how much of a comparison you get out of that.
I believe it's somewhat of an organic process because, as you noted, Judge Haynes, some of the schools are starting off at different levels than others. Her school, Schaumburg, started off at a relatively higher level than the average RSD school. But while the average RSD school was improving, Schaumburg was flatlining.
But, I mean, if I'm getting a 93 on a test all the time and the highest grade's 100, it's harder for me to improve than Mr. X over here who started at a 20, but now we're trying to get him to a 30.
The SPS is not a percentage. I believe it's out of 200. I'm not 100% certain, but it's not simply a percentage score. In any event,
some sort of grade, but I'm saying the higher your grades, the harder it is to improve them. Okay.
But if you're still getting
Judge Higginbotham knows that because he always made A's, so he just couldn't improve.
I suspect you all made A's. but that being said, it was a D-graded school. There still was ample room for improvement. The improvement was not made.
Judge Dennis made A pluses, by the way.
Excellent. So, and then in turn, the failure to meet the performance goals ties into the ADEA prima facie case analysis. I wanted to refer specifically to the Williams versus Taco Bell case, which I believe Judge Higginbotham, you were on the panel for that one, where a store manager failed to meet the goals set by management. They held that not only did he ultimately lose on summary judgment, he was not even deemed qualified for failure to for purposes of making a prima facie case. In this instance, we contend that the fact that Ms. Reipold did not meet her stated goals of 10 points of improvement in the SPS score, as well as improvement on the ILEAP tests. There were 24 test subgroups, six grades, four subjects. They only improved by 10 points in 5 of the 24, and there were significant problems. There were reductions in the scores in some of them. Also, the evidence is clear that she had trouble evaluating her staff competently, and they had to override her personnel decisions more so than any other principal in the RSD. In fact, if you remove the second highest number of instances, the number of instances where they overrode her recommendation is equal to the 10 remaining schools. 13 out of the 13 faculty members, 42% of the faculty. She said, oh, yeah, they're fine. Let's keep them on. RSD, after looking at the data, says, no, they are not doing their job. One of them was a teacher whose value added was in the second percentile. She said, that's good enough. Let's keep them. That teacher also had 24 absences. These details are set forth in the exhibits to the summary judgment motion. The records, their sites are in the record on this. Another one was a PE teacher who had poor classroom management that had, quote, unquote, significant consequences in the past. Again, she thought that was okay, said, let's keep them on for another year. RSD overrode that decision. There were 11 other teachers who were similarly poorly performing, and she said, good enough to let them go on. Part of the job of a principal is to competently evaluate the staff and to implement the RSD's vision. And in this instance, her personnel record was markedly worse than any of the other principals at any other school based
Did she accept the teaching position?
She declined the teaching position. Also,
where
I want...
Where is she now?
I don't know. You'll have to ask opposing counsel that. I assume she's in the courtroom, but yes. Want to also refer...
I didn't mean now.
Yes, I understand, Your Honor. Want to get back on the comparative credentials point where he was saying... Ms. Reipel argues that that she was far more qualified than Ms. Alston, the individual who replaced her. Under a Fifth Circuit law, it's a very highly deferential standard to the employer. In the Moss versus BMC software case, which we cited in our briefs, it held the ADEA was not intended to be a vehicle for judicial second-guessing of employment decisions, nor was it intended to transform the courts into personnel managers. The ADEA cannot protect older employees from erroneous or even arbitrary personnel decisions, but only from those decisions which are unlawfully motivated. You don't have to agree that the decision to hire Ms. Alston was necessarily correct. You just have to say that you have to examine whether there's proof of age-based discrimination. There were a number of very positive factors for Ms. Alston. Her teacher recommendations that she'd received, she had a strong record of achievement in an urban setting. She was teaching in Philadelphia, and her reading scores improved from 19% to 50% in a single year. She also was a leader in the curriculum, in designing the curriculum. She was taking a leadership role. The RSD could reasonably conclude that her potential...
How's her school doing?
They ultimately converted the school after that year to a charter school, and they did not issue an SPS score for that year, so I cannot say. I see that my time is just about up. But,
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sanders, you have 5 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you. Judge Haynes, to answer your question, how did her school do? That school went down to a 55. Ms. Repo was at 72. That school went down to 55. I just happen to have that number. Also, in terms of overriding my client's recommendation, the information I have is that teachers scored as proficient by my client were terminated by the RSD and replaced by young, inexperienced, out-of-state teachers.
Okay,
and
where are you getting that
from? I was explaining.
No, I know that, but where?
My client gave me that.
And is it in the record? Can you give it, we go on record
sites, I apologize. I had the answer because the question was asked, and that's where I got the answer.
So you're saying you just know it from your client, you don't have it in the record?
Oh, I'm sure it's in the record, Your Honor. And I will, if the court allows, that we will present it if the court allows.
You might want to take another look at whether there was a July 2 event, by the way.
Was that what, Your Honor?
Go ahead, it's all right.
All right. Now, also, the statement was made that my client was given a job teaching. What is in the record is a July 31st record, a letter that says, unfortunately, due to district reorganization stemming from budget restraints, shifting student enrollment, etc., your position is no longer available. She was fired as a teacher in that first job. She was fired from Johnson Elementary. That's in the record. Judge Higginbottom, you ask, what about the principals at the other schools? What happened to them? One was given a newly created position in Baton Rouge, which is in the record, over student discipline, making about basically the same amount of money. One was given an assistant principal's job, the principal from Craig. Another was transferred to as an assistant principal at Sarah Reed. And a third...
How old were all these people?
They were younger than my client by at least 10 years. All of these were younger, and these were the low scores. And the other one remained as a principal. These are the schools with a 28, a 48, a 33, and a 57. So that's what happened to them. I also heard Your Honors ask about EEOC record. This was early on in our pleadings, all in the records about EEOC. And the statement I read came from the EEOC document about Ms. Brown. So that's in the record. They didn't question it then, but now they question it in terms of Ms. Brown's authority. That's in the record. Also in the record, my client was replaced by RSD hired five younger assistant principals, age 36, age 35, age 34, age 46, age 34. And this is in the record coming from EEOC. They admitted to this to EEOC. So that was a trend of bringing in younger people. Now, in terms of my clients and her work, she started out with the 61. The RSD average was 54. Then she went to 61. She went up, which was second in the whole RSD. So there were a lot of bad schools. My client was second. Then she went to a 70. And at that point, she was third. And the same happened in 2010, 2011. She was third out of a lot of bad schools. And then she ended up being fourth the year that she was terminated. We respectfully suggest that while these facts are not all together yet, because we never had a trial, we think that the summary judgment motion was premature because
discovery closed by the time the decision was made?
Was it closed?
Yeah.
I don't think so. They thought they had a strong case for summary judgment, and they filed their motion for summary judgment. That's what happened.
You didn't ask for discovery that you didn't get, right?
No, that wasn't the problem. I had enough to show that we had a strong case. They apparently didn't get enough information because these issues are still in dispute, and that's the point. If we have discovery, if we have a trial, everything will be answered. And we think the court that you all have allowed oral argument. I have 40 seconds. I'm going to stop unless there's a question from either of you. It's been a long day. Not for me, but for you all.
Yeah,
thank you.
I was going to say for all of you.
Thank you.
Well, both of you all have a lot of energy for this hour.
Okay, that concludes our oral arguments today. We take these cases under